It's time for the Bishop's Radio Hour with host Bob Dunning. Brought to you live from our studios in Sacramento each weekday morning from 11 to noon through the auspices of His Excellency Bishop William Wiegand.
We're pleased now to welcome in Roy Shulman. Roy, pleased to have you. Appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, you're going to come out here in a week or so.
That's right. Starting on the 12th, I think, Wednesday, January 12th.
Right, and you'll be at the Sacramento Breakfast Club on the 12th, and you'll also be having a book signing at Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts on Palm Avenue in Sacramento. Your book, Salvation is from the Jews. Explain the title.
Well, first of all, I'm not going to exactly apologize for it, but I would say that if that line were to come from me, it would be horribly arrogant. Salvation is from the Jews. The only excuse for making such a bold assertion is that those are the words of Jesus himself in the Gospel of John. He said to the Samaritan woman at the well, salvation is from the Jews. So the book is really an extended study of just what that means and in what way is salvation from the Jews and what role did the Jews have in bringing about the salvation of all mankind leading up to the second coming in the period between the first coming and the second coming. Leading up to the first coming in the period between the first and second coming and leading up to the second coming.
Now, you were raised Jewish?
I am, yeah.
And tell us about your background and how you eventually became a Catholic.
Sure. My parents are German-Jewish Holocaust refugees. They fled Hitler's Germany. And I was raised outside of New York City in a kind of typical German-Jewish refugee community. My parents were fairly observant Jews. They had been raised extremely observant, but when they came to this country, they let things slide a little bit. And I went through Jewish religious education all the way through high school. Of course, I was bar mitzvah, but I pursued continued the religious education all the way through. And in my later high school years, even got more religiously oriented, I'd say, and even explored essentially Jewish religious life and Hasidism, which is the most orthodox form of Judaism. I actually lived and traveled with a Hasidic rabbi for a few months, kind of exploring that path.
So you weren't just Jewish by birth. You were enthusiastically religiously Jewish as well.
That's right. Thank God. I mean, I've always been sort of a religious fanatic. So thank God I found the true religion. I mean, the fullness of the truth.
Now, sometimes we see children getting dragged against their will to religious ceremonies, religious instruction, etc. It sounds like that wasn't you.
No, I dragged my parents against their will to synagogue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you were immersed in this. At what point did it... I don't want to put words in your mouth. Did it begin to fail you, or did you begin to not believe it?
Well, I would actually say that I failed God. It was like a two-stage process. The first stage was that I failed God, because what happened was, first I got my driver's license, which presented the first set of problems, because all of a sudden I was free to sort of be on my own. And then I went to college and of course, lived without any oversight. And this is the late 60s, early 70s, and there were a lot of, freely available ways to fall into mortal sin. And I did. And what happened was my religious sensibility, my sense of union with God, vanished fairly quickly, and I think it was because of essentially being in a state of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And so then God kind of receded into the background, became a vague memory, and... over the course of a few years, I became, for all intents and purposes, agnostic. I don't think I continued to really have a sense of his reality and his existence. And it was in that state of agnosticism that I received, frankly, a revelation that brought me to the Catholic Church.
Was it one of these instantaneous bolts of lightning?
It was. It really was. It was a kind of St. Paul falling off his horse experience. I was walking in nature alone early one morning, and I received the grace of, from one moment to the next, finding myself in the presence of God, looking back over my life, looking back on it after death in the presence of God and seeing everything that I would be pleased about and everything that I would wish I had done differently.
Do you think you were searching for this experience?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was the furthest thing from my mind. I had really, by now, by the time of this experience, I was in my early 30s. I had probably been 10 or 12 years since I had thought seriously about God.
So you really weren't going to save yourself.
That's right. I was just getting deeper and deeper into a kind of miasma of meaninglessness.
Mm-hmm. And explain how you knew you were in the presence of God. What you didn't have a vision, I presume, or did you?
Well, I actually think that probably technically the correct terminology might be intellectual vision. It was a visionary experience. A little bit of it was visual, but the majority of it was intellectual. In other words, it was infused knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
The knowledge of God's presence was more powerful, was more overwhelming than the knowledge of the ground that I was walking on or the trees that were in my field of vision. And the knowledge of what was flowing to me. In other words, the seeing my life, understanding that everything that I ever did had a moral content for good or for evil, which mattered for all eternity, understanding that everything that had ever happened to me had been the most perfect thing that could have been arranged by the hand of an all-loving, all-knowing God. The knowledge and the certainty was, all I can say is it was realer than the physical reality around me.
At any point, did it say to you, go back to your Jewish roots?
Well, I was very aware of the person of God. I was very aware of being in his presence and that this extraordinary gift was coming from him. And I prayed to him on the spot. I prayed, I knew he was my God, I knew he was my Lord and Master, I knew that he had directed everything in my life, I knew that I would be accountable to him when I died, and I prayed, Lord, let me know your name so I can worship and serve you properly, so I can essentially know what religion to follow. I don't mind if you're Buddha and I have to become Buddhist, I don't mind if you're Apollo and I have to become a Roman pagan, I don't mind if you're Krishna and I have to become Hindu, as long as you're not Christ and I have to become Christian. I did not think of him as the Jewish God because I could not associate him with what I thought of as the God from the Old Testament, and for that matter, the God of the Jewish ritual regulations, which is a fairly kind of unyielding, severe, legalistic God, or the face of God that's reflected in those things. It has that character. And so I didn't associate him with Old Testament Judaism, but I was unwilling to associate him with Christianity.
And yet, he dragged you along anyway.
Well, he respected that prayer, I'm convinced, because he did not tell me his name. I was simultaneously praying, let me know your name, and also saying, as long as it isn't Jesus. Mm-hmm. Now I know, of course, it was Jesus. So he didn't tell me his name. But I did know that the meaning and purpose of my life was to worship and serve him.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, he did drug me along. So, from that moment on, I knew the meaning and purpose of my life. There was a challenge to working it out and figuring out what this meant in practice and how to pursue the knowledge of him. What I did was every night before going to sleep after that initial experience, I would say a short prayer to know the name of the Lord and Master who had revealed himself that day. And a year to the day after the initial experience, I went to sleep. I felt as though I was woken up. Now, I know I was physically asleep. I know this took place in the context of a dream. But what it felt like is that I was gently woken, led to a room, and left alone with the most beautiful young woman I could imagine. And I knew without being told that it was the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she offered to answer any questions I might have, and I I asked her four or five questions. Now, my memory of this experience is as though I were awake, but I know that I wasn't. So I asked her the questions, and she answered them. And then she spoke to me a little longer, and then the audience is over. And the next morning when I woke up, I mean, I was bright enough to know that it had been Christ that day who had revealed himself to me, and that Christianity was the path to follow.
And that was the one thing you didn't want to have happen. How did that affect you?
Well, there had been a year between the first experience and the second experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Lord had been working on me in subtle ways. My resistance was definitely lowered. By the time I had that experience with Mary, I was kind of resentful. I mean, I was still resentful towards Christianity. I definitely still had no sympathy for the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. But your immune system had been weakened, at least, huh?
It had been. And, I think by then I knew that God was the most... I mean, God was more important than my prejudices.
Right, right. So tell us how you... did you come just to Christianity and then you came to Catholic Church, or did you come directly to the Catholic Church?
Well, So the morning after that experience of Mary, right, I wake up and I know that I want to be Christian. I know that I want to be as good a Christian as I possibly can be. I don't know what a Protestant is. I don't know what a Catholic is. I don't know what the difference is. I don't know. I've never heard of the sacraments for all intents and purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, I just opened a phone book and looked for a church. So it took probably most of a year, or probably about 6 months, to figure out the difference between Protestantism and Catholicism, and to kind of hone in on the Catholic Church. Now, what made that a relatively straightforward process was already knowing who Mary was.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously that, I didn't last long in the Protestant churches I went to with my devotion to Mary.
Because of a lack of devotion to Mary?
No, because of
in the Protestant churches.
That's right. Well, because of my devotion to Mary,
mm-hmm.
I didn't last long in the Protestant churches.
Correct. Because they don't have that devotion.
Well, not only do they not have it, but sometimes they actually have a pointed rejection of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've encountered that in many discussions I've had. I won't say denigrating, but just a pointed sort of a wall.
Defensiveness, right?
Yeah.
Because if it's true about Mary, everyone has to be Catholic.
Right. So, did you have anybody helping you along the way?
Well, very early in this process, the providence in my conversion, I think, is unutterably beautiful. I actually found myself spending time at a Carthusian monastery. Now, I don't know if your listeners, how many know who the Carthusians are, but they are a contemplative order in the church, the only contemplative order that still follows its original rule. They live in total silence. They live in solitary confinement, each monk. It's a hermetic life. They live in their cells, and they don't leave their cells except
mm-hmm.
for official business or for the offices. And they have one meal a day. They never sleep more than 3 hours at a time. They break sleep in the middle of the night for 3 hours of prayer. And I through a bizarre set of circumstances, visited a Carthusian monastery and actually was welcomed there as a potential, essentially as a potential aspirant.
Mm-hmm.
Spent some time there. And this is before I was baptized. This is even before I had any sympathy for the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And the prior of that monastery took me under his wing and sort of became my spiritual director.
And now where was that?
I was in France.
Oh, in France, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then you eventually, where did you go from there?
Well, I was very earnest, in my search. So, I did figure out that the sacraments are for real and the Catholic Church is for real, and that's the heart of Christianity and the fullness of Christianity. So I essentially set out to be baptized. It turned out not to be such a straightforward process. I was even told by like the abbot of a Carmelite monastery, that Jews weren't supposed, you know, that Jews shouldn't become Catholic. All God wants of them is to be good Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually was rebuffed in a couple of attempts to be baptized. But, you know, over the course, it took about 2 years probably to find a priest to baptize me and to go through the RCIA program.
Mm-hmm. And that happened here in the United States?
Yeah, that happened here in the United States. And then one of the reasons I wrote my book is precisely because there's been this sort of gradual infiltration of that ridiculous, you know, pseudo-theology, you know, among some people in the church, that somehow Jews have their way and Christians have their way and never the twain shall meet. So I wrote my book to present the correct view of the relationship between Judaism and Christianity.
So, and that's what you're hoping to accomplish with it.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm. You had an interesting prayer for Jewish conversion from the First Vatican Council.
That's right, because, see, in the old days, so to speak, until the Holocaust, the Catholic Church was very aware not only of, of the rightness of evangelizing the Jews, but even of the special debt, one could say, that the Church has to the Jews. After all, they brought about the incarnation of Christ. They brought about redemption. They brought about the Catholic Church. I mean, I will argue that the Catholic Church is nothing other than the continuation of Judaism after the Messiah has come.
Mm-hmm.
And that perspective, that understanding, used to be a lot more, a lot closer to the surface than it is now. So at the First Vatican Council, which was in the latter half of the 19th century, the fathers of the council actually issued an invitation, a very cordial invitation to the Jews to enter the church. Would you like me to read some of that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That would be excellent, yeah.
The undersigned fathers of the council humbly yet urgently, beseechingly pray that the Holy Ecumenical Council of the Vatican deign to come to the aid of the unfortunate nation of Israel with an entirely paternal invitation to express the wish that, finally exhausted by a wait no less futile than long, the Israelites hasten to recognize the Messiah, our Savior, Jesus Christ, truly promised to Abraham and announced by Moses, thus completing and crowning, not changing, the Mosaic religion.
Yeah, I think that's very compelling the way it's put. That it's completing and crowning, not changing their religion.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a very interesting quote. I presume that's included in the book.
That is included in the book. Let me just put in a little aside. The book, as you mentioned, the title of the book is Salvation is from the Jews. It's put out by Ignatius Press. And if people are interested or if people want to find the whole prayer that I just read part of or so forth, I do have a website with the same name, salvationisfromthejews.com.
Okay. Okay. And you've been a Catholic now 12, 13 years, something
That's
like
right.
that?
That's right. I was baptized. As a matter of fact, right around now, I was baptized January 5th, 1992. Oh,
so tomorrow will be your 13th anniversary. Tell us how your faith has it grown. Has it changed in that period of time?
It definitely has, and it definitely has grown. I mean, I've received communion almost every day since the day of my baptism. And frankly, I've averaged more than once a day. I don't think I've missed communion more than probably 10 days in those 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, nothing conceivably builds up, you know, one's spirituality, one's spiritual body, if you will, anything like receiving the body and blood of God, right, in Holy Communion. So, yeah, that's had a profound effect. My faith has definitely grown, although it's a little bit of an odd situation because I was initially given, in some sense, a gift of faith. I mean, it almost didn't count as faith because, you know, faith is belief in things unseen. I kind of started mm-hmm. out with belief in things seen. So it almost wasn't faith, and that has had to transition to being genuine faith.
Do you talk to Jewish groups? Do you talk to your Jewish friends? Do you talk to your family about this?
Well, I do. I don't talk to Jewish groups because I'm not welcome at Jewish groups. if I were, I would be very happy to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'd certainly talk to Jewish friends. I'd certainly talk to my parents and my family when they want to hear what I have to say. In other words, I don't impose it on them, but I certainly jump eagerly into any situation where they are in some way inviting a discussion.
What's the general reaction?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll start with my favorite reaction. My absolute favorite reaction, actually, my mom's not listening to Catholic radio, so I'll say this. This actually came from my mom.
Oh, you never know. She may be.
Well, in that case, I have nothing to lose because then the battle's already won. But my mother's reaction was incredibly touching to me. At one point, in a very intimate moment, she said to me, "Roy, sometimes I think what bothers me the most is deep down inside, I'm afraid you're right." So that's the best reaction.
Mm.
And I think that's not uncommon. I think a lot of the resistance that Jews have to being preached the gospel, you saw it with the Passion movie recently.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the resistance is, I think, that deep down inside they're afraid that Christianity might be right.
Mm-hmm. Is it a cause for her to explore it all, do you think?
Internally, not externally yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is very touching.
Another reaction from a friend of mine from university, a very Orthodox Jew, with rather a tolerant shrug and, "Well, you're not the first."
Mm-hmm.
In other words, an acknowledgement that over the centuries, many Jews, including many of the most fervent and devout Jews, have received the grace of recognizing Christ.
Well, my sense about people who are fervent and devout is that they are seekers of truth, and that fervency and devoutness it will eventually lead you here.
That's exactly right.
Well, Roy Shoman, I think people are in for a treat next week when you're out here, and we'll look very much forward to seeing you. The book is Salvation is from the Jews. It's also the website salvationisfromthejews.com. Is that right?
That's right.
And we'll look forward to seeing you a week from tomorrow out here in Sacramento.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Roy Shoman, who is he will be at the Sacramento Professional and Business Breakfast Club at 7 a.m. a week from tomorrow. That is the 12th of January. Tomorrow is his 13th anniversary of being baptized a Catholic. Again, his book is Salvation is from the Jews. We'll take a quick break here. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Radio Hour right after this.